This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinals fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Ruffled Feathers here at Two Birds on a Bat. We're coming to you from the Patio Studio. Patio is the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans everywhere. Since 1998, pre or post game, Patio's is the place to be. This show is brought to you by Innovated Companies with a special thanks to our good friend Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovated Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at InnovatedCompanies.com. All right, Cardinals fans. Look, our season is over as far as our contest against the Chicago Cubs. We've split playing all 10 games at Wrigley Field, and a few of them, I think three of them, if I recall this correctly, as the home team. Feels really weird to have a home team victory at Wrigley Field. Just doesn't feel right, but we'll take it. So they've split the season series, and now they move on to face the Twins. Before I go there, I just want to remind everybody that you can find us at twobirdsonabat.com. Please click subscribe to the podcast. It takes about 30 seconds, and best of all, it's free. Located on Twitter, at Birds on a Bat Show. Find us on Facebook by searching Two Birds on a Bat. Make sure you like that page and share it. On Instagram, you can find us at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it for free today. All right, it's time to welcome on this week's guest. It's Mark Littell, former pitcher for the Kansas City Royals and famously traded for Al Hrabowski to our Cardinals in 1978. He's been a guest on several shows I've done, but he's in my opinion, the best, absolute best. This is Mark Littell, Ramrod by nickname. Lots of nicknames. You might have more nicknames than anybody I know. But Mark, it's always awesome to talk to you, and this time is a little bit better because I get to actually talk to you face to face. So, how have you been? How have you been keeping busy?
Well, actually, pretty good. I'm up in North Dakota, and it is actually 39 degrees when I woke up this morning. Whoa! So it's the start of fall, and baseball season is going on, as we well know, and that's all fine and dandy. And the Cardinals are yes and no sometimes, and hit and miss, and they won three in a row against the Cubs, and they trounced one yesterday, but that's baseball. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, you know, finishing so they split the season with the Cubs, essentially only 10 games. Right. Very strange to see them as a home team though in Wrigley Field, but they did win one of those games. So finally the root for the home team, I guess, if you're a Cubs fan. So they had to in those doubleheaders. But how strange is that, though, Mark? The doubleheader reduced to seven innings, and Cardinals playing home games at Wrigley Field. Something just seems unnatural, wrong with that.
Well, it's some ways you look at it as college ball, because some have 9-7 doubleheaders, and some divisions they have 7-7 on the doubleheader. And you better be spot on real quick and hold your own and throw a lot of strikes early in the count to get your guys off the field.
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, innings are a premium. And you know, I want to get into Adam Wainwright here in just a bit, just what you're seeing from him this year. But boy, innings are a premium, and luckily that they've got those expanded rosters this year and taxi squads and doubleheaders, they're allowed to add an extra yes. arm usually. So, gosh, without that, the Cardinals, their success in getting through this up to this point speaks a lot to their depth in their organization. So really got to give the club a lot of credit for putting an emphasis on yes. pitching and developing pitching. So they've got a lot of it. Now, I could argue there's not a lot of like one or two place starters in the mix, but the guys they do have are really good, and they're getting yep. them through it. And a lot of so many debuts this year for guys that wouldn't have been called up this year. They would have still been down in Double A. They would have sure. been working out some kinks in AAA. They wouldn't have seen the big leagues this year, but it was necessary because of the pandemic. And now just because of the sheer amount of workload, right? So have you ever seen this much baseball jammed into a couple months, Mark?
Not really. It's not real hard, but it is hard in a sense. The kickback to this whole thing is that they've got a 60-man roster, I guess you might say. They can just drop down into that system right there and pick anybody they want who's got a hot hand, you might say, it's also a good testing ground for, you know, you look at your outfielders, they're trying to test in my sense at five or six different outfielders out there. You got you know, guys breaking down a little bit and not performing. And then all of a sudden, you know, they do perform, you know, and that's the part about, you know, the whole thing about baseball, why it's the greatest game in the world. It's about competition, and it's right in front of you. You know, you got a round ball, a round bat, and you got to hit it square. Well, that's very, very true. So the pitchers have to get off the mound so they can let their team hit. If they spend too much time out there, like your Wainwright, for instance, he doesn't spend much time out there. If he has a long inning, he had a long inning the other day. I think it was 43 pitches. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he made it through, and he pulled himself together, and the Cardinals end up winning that game. I thought that was great. You know, he bounced back and came to the top.
Yeah, so, it's not uncommon to see that from him, right? He might have a little bit of difficulty in inning one or two, but if he limits the damage and more times than not. And when he does that, he's able to lock in and stretch himself out. He got through, I think, eight innings, which is, gosh, it was much needed. The start before that was a complete game at 39 years old. Right. Just a fantastic and an amazing performance by him. And so what are just your overall thoughts? Because you've seen him pitch this year. You've seen him have to transform himself. You know, a lot different pitcher than he was, say, back in 2014, 2015. Right. He's had to almost try some things on the fly, and you can almost see him doing it during those outings. But just in through your eyes, what do you see in Adam Wainwright these days?
Well, you look at Adam Wainwright, and I think of Jim Cott. Jim Cott, I asked him one time. Jim Cott had 26 years in the big leagues, and I asked Kitty Cat. I said, "Hey, Kitty, what are you doing here? What's the deal about longevity?" And he says, "Well, you have to change every year just a little bit." And that's something Adam Wainwright is doing. He's doing something right to where he said, "Hey, they knew me from last year like this, just a little bit. I'm going to tweak this pitch, or I'm going to, you know, fall off a little bit on this pitch and make it a little bit softer. And then I'm going to try to, you know, use maybe the inner half more." Mm-hmm. And there's just different things that a pitcher has to do, you know, to survive. And that's the thing Adam Wainwright did at 39 years old. He's truly a survivor. And that's actually amazing. You know, because he came in as a power pitcher. He still has some power pitch qualities at age 39, but he's pitching more rather than throwing, you know, with the, you know, the dead velocity that he had in his 20s, you know. So he's done some really amazing things.
Yeah, I mean, I was guilty of a couple of years ago thinking he was probably done. I was happy when he came back on the incentive-based contract, and kind of paraphrase how he, I think, when asked about that deal, he's like, "Well, I've got paid for a lot of pitches I didn't throw," because, you know, he's dealt with injury. He's missed almost two full seasons throughout his career. One from Tommy John, the other one was a torn ACL. he doesn't have to worry about that this year. They've taken the bats out of the pitcher's hands. We can, I think I know how you feel about that, but I was happy to see him come back in that incentive based deal. He did everything right. He's back. I wouldn't mind seeing him for one more year. I think he's a good guy to have around, a good guy for this young pitching staff to learn from. So I hope he's around for a few more.
Well, he's a big mentor, and there's no doubt about it that he carries himself quite well, you know, in the dugout, you know, in the clubhouse, and obviously on the field. So, you know, anything that he can do to help the Cardinals system, and he's went over backwards, you know, to perform and to go out there, and he's truly a gentleman, you know, so he knows that's a plus, and that's actually almost a must with the Cardinals system, because they have some pretty good guys. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. How did the young Mark Littell compare, stack up with these guys you're talking about that are nice guys? How did you compare with that?
The young version. I was a nice guy, but I was a closer, so I've got about a 3 to 5 IQ to start with. You know, when you go out there, it's what closers basically have. You know, and we got no brains, and, you know, give me the ball. And if the ball's not, the inning's not over in the ninth by in about 2.5 minutes, you know, somebody's scoring on you. So you try to make it short and sweet and, you know, get off the mound and have a Anheuser-Busch product at my time back then. So the clubhouse was full of that.
I bet.
Thank you, Mr. Bush.
So take us back to that time, I guess I took you there by question, but so you started out your career with the Kansas City Royals, and eventually you were traded to St. Louis, like I said, in the offseason, I think the winter meetings that year in 78. Right. You got the unique chance to play for Whitey in two different organizations, one American, obviously, one National League. How did he evolve as a manager? Was he the same guy who managed you while you were in Kansas City, or was he a little bit different in St. Louis?
Same animal. Well, you know what? He didn't change. He knows what he's supposed to do. And I actually knew he and Mr. Bush would be a really good fit, you know, and they both could, they're both full of a little malarkey there, you know? So they hit it off real well. And they could tip their bud, this bud's for you and things of that nature. But I guess Mr. Bush took care of the beer product, and Whitey took care of the baseball Cardinals on the field, and he's good to listen to. Whitey's sharp. He's good with people. He's good in front of a camera. He's good with the players. He's very good, and it's kind of like I remember one time when somebody said, "Oh, they were talking about a team captain." Well, why do you like the leadership role of this? And he said, well, basically, I'm your team captain, so there's not going to be a team captain, which I thought that was great. You don't need a team captain. You know, the Yankees have a team captain. Who gives a crap? So your manager is Whitey Herzog. Whitey knows what he wants to do. You know, keep it simple, stupid. Don't throw another curve out there with a team captain. So it pretty much ended.
So it was a pleasant surprise. You showed up at one of the other shows I do live on Thursday nights, a Team Arrivals podcast. Yeah. And I know the Cubs fans threw a question at you, you know, trying to get a jab in there as a Cubs fan. You came back at him with what I think was a great response. And you actually, you responded to a question, but then you brought something up, and I think it was just to get that knife in there a little bit, but it was awesome. Take us back to Lou Brock's game where he hit his 3,000th hit. Because this was against the Cubs, which is why I know that's why you threw it out there.
I met Lou Brock when I was 11 years old. I had a broken foot, and I went up on an elevator in Old Sportsman's Ballpark. My father had asked if my mom and my brother and I could ride up on an elevator to nosebleed section. That was a game, one of the very first games Lou Brock played in St. Louis. And the elevator went up to the second floor went up higher, but the second floor is where the Cardinals locker room was, just like in, Cubs Wrigley. That's where the lockers are there on the second floor. So anyway, rather than Lou taking the stairway, you know, he took the elevator. Mm-hmm. And this guy, we get on, Lou gets on. I didn't know who this was. My father did. And halfway up, my dad said, "You're Lou Brock." And he said, "Yes, sir." And he said, we're really glad to have you over here. And he said, I wish you the best. And he says, well, thank you very much. And he gets off, and we go up the nosebleed section. I thought we had great seats because we could see all of St. Louis, So anyway, my mom is sitting there saying, oh, there's that young man. He just got two hits today. Oh, wow. That's really cool. We were talking about Lou Brock. Mm-hmm. So anyway, 14 years later, when I get traded over to the Cardinals, I get into a game. We're playing the Cubs. It's a full stadium. And Lou Brock leads off the game. He gets his 2,999 hit. And then in the fourth inning, he gets 3,000. Game stops for 8 or 10 minutes, for all the hoopla. It's better because of the Cubs. And so anyway, I get into the game. I pitch the eighth and ninth. It's a tie ball game. We score a run. I get the win. I thought that was just absolutely crazy. The timing was absolutely crazy. The other factor about this whole adventure is that Tommy Herr, that was his first start. The other factor was Kenny Reitz got his 1,000th hit that night. Lou Brock gets his 3,000th hit that night. And good old Southeast Missouri boy, Mark Littell, picks up the win to this whole thing. So it was pretty cool. I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Great moments.
That's amazing. And I'm so glad you shared that. But tell us what it was like then. So just how was Lou Brock as a teammate? And I understand that you were a relief pitcher, so maybe during most games you're out in your bullpen or down the right field line, but I'm sure you spent some time around Lou. Just tell us what kind of a guy he was off the field.
Off or on the field, he is what he is. He was a gentleman. He was a professional. Lou always had the smile. He had a fantastic smile. He never complained, ever complained. You wouldn't have known if he was hurt. He played hurt. I know he played hurt. And he just showed up like you're supposed to. That's a term we use. This guy could show up. So, and he's just he's going to be missed. There's no doubt about it. He's just very, very interesting person to be around. Really is. He doesn't talk much, but he's a great person. Really is.
Yeah, it's as a fan, I guess we get used, and you grow up like this too. You have relatives, and you think that they're always going to be there. And then you look down and all of a sudden they're not. And so it's just one of those red coats that we see on opening day, that we see during big games at Busch Stadium. It's a coat we're all going to miss, and we're certainly going to miss Lou. But he's forever there outside that ballpark on that statue, which is one of my favorite ones that they have out there, is Lou Brock's statue.
Yes, yes.
So, Mark, I don't want to go to the story yet, but it's my favorite one that you have. But let's go over to this other thing, because you're author of two books. On the Eighth Day God Made Baseball and Country Boy Conveniently Wild. So you have two of these. I know you're working on a new one, but just tell us about this whole process, because you've stated many times, like, I don't want to write a book. I don't want to put words down on paper. I got other things to do. But you've written two of them now. What have you learned kind of about yourself going back into your life, into the things that made you? What's that whole process been like?
Well, it's fun on the recall part, because it's like, being a pitcher, you have to recall everything, but I've actually enjoyed it. I didn't start writing until about 6 years ago. Well, not quite 6 years ago right now, but I've got the two books out. I've got a third one coming out called What's Up Ramrod. It has a question mark behind it. And this one will have two kangaroos on the front of it looking out at you. And I spent a lot of time in Australia, and it's about coaching experience. But about the part about the writing, I was afraid to write because I'm ADD as hell, if you hadn't figured that out. So the thing is I started writing, and a friend of mine said, hey, he said, you write this, didn't you? And I said, yeah, I wrote it. And he said, hey, I want to back your book. I said, what do you mean you want to back my book? He said, nobody makes me laugh. I said, yeah, I know that. And he says, well, he said, I really want to back your book. I said, well, whatever. But anyway, so I kept writing, and I got somebody to edit it. And I don't use a ghostwriter. It's me. It's all my stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's in my voice, the way I say it. It's not somebody else, mingling in. But it's all fun stuff, and I really enjoyed it, and it kind of actually calms me a little bit. But, you know, bringing back all these experiences, you know, my childhood and the character and blowing up a truck with dynamite and, you know, and I mean, I did a lot of stuff that I'd be in jail now. You know, pretty simple. When I blew that truck up, I was 15 years old, you know, my brother and I. And that didn't go over well with my dad because, well, he was a Korean War guy and he got shot all to hell. So he was already pissed off. And so, you know, it's a lot of stories like it. And then I knocked the old lady out in Cleveland. I mean, the older lady, I'm sorry. The older lady out in Cleveland, knocked her cold as a wedge. And, you know, and that was a full stadium at 60,000 people that night. I mean, they wanted a piece of me pretty bad. And, you know, the ball got away down in the bullpen. All of a sudden, here's this Scud missile, you know, flying through the stands, and it nails her right in the side of the head. And I just envisioned her dropping in her grandson's lap. I went, holy cow. Well, and then I got rushed out to the mound. And Whitey said that was the safest place for me to be, out there in the middle of the mound pitching. I said, hey, let's go. Here we go. So it was all fun.
So, I know the history of the nickname now, Ramrod. Tell us a little bit about that, because I didn't know that. I learned that last night by something you had sent me. And just tell us about that, because I bet there's a fair amount of people that don't know where that nickname came from.
Well, anyway, you know, Country was my nickname a lot, but why you always call me Airhead for some reason. Anyway, the Ramrod part came around when I started coaching. And this book is all about coaching, and it's, you know, the fun things with that. And there are a lot of funny things that happen in coaching. And I was all over the world, and I coached 18 years professionally, 4 different organizations. So you do see a lot. And I remembered a lot just as well. But I would be doing, say, PFP. PFP is pitcher's fielding practice on, say, the fifth field, which is the half field. And I'd be over there running it, and I'd get 15 pitchers in every 20 minutes for PFP, maybe a little bit longer. And then we'd rotate. Well, I'd get a new crew in there, and I'd get a rookie once in a while. And if a guy did a good job, I would say, hey, nice job. You know, it was kind of rare, but if he ran the right route and did it right, I'd say, hey, nice job. I would say, nice job, Ramrod. You know, sometimes, hey, way to go, Ramrod. Nice job. And he'd go to the end of the line. And usually there was guys that knew me, you know, we all knew each other to a sense, but I'd get this newbie would come in, and this rookie, he'd say, hey, you hear what he just said to me? He said, hey, nice job, Ramrod. Those guys that put their gloves up to their mouth, and then they'd be, you know, snickering. And then the big dog would come out and say, well, you know why he calls you Ramrod? And he said, no, why is he calling me Ramrod? You don't know your effing name. So that's where I call everybody Ramrod, you know, even the little kids, because I coached 18 years, but I also had, you know, 10 years of amateurs. You know, I had kids from age 12, and I had 2 college teams, 3 years ago, I had 2 college teams for about 5 years. So during the summer. So it was fun. You know, you see all these names and everything, and, you know, and they don't have names on their back, and you say, hey, Ramrod, what you doing? They all like that. You know, they like it when I call them Ramrod.
So, you know, as you've alluded to, you've coached everywhere. You coached in Australia.
Something,
and I remember, can't quite remember this story, I'm probably going to screw this up. Now, you went hunting with Aborigines at one point, right?
Right.
Barefoot in Australia.
Right. At night.
Jesus. Okay. So a little bit about that experience, because that terrifies me. Australia terrifies me enough. I've only been there once. But if I believe everything that I see, and the internet can fool me from time to time, but there's some dangerous things over there. I can't imagine hunting barefoot at night, but tell us about that. Got to hear it.
Well, I was doing a clinic up in Port Hedland. I was based in Perth, which is the furthest American consulate from Washington. So I was over on the Indian Ocean. They flew me up 600 miles to the north. Port Hedland has 10,000 people in it at that time. They had 5,000 Australian miners because they mined iron ore from 600 miles to the interior by rail, and then they had about 4,000 to 5,000 Aboriginals. Well, when I did the clinic that night, I touched some of these Aboriginals, and they never seen a touch an Aboriginal because I was trying to help put, you know, his body in right place and stuff like that. And I'm going to use them as an example. So anyway, afterward, they noticed this and they had never seen that. And so you had the white community over here. You had the black community over here. And you talking about a race thing. It was really interesting. But after I got through talking to the whites, the blacks came over, the Aboriginals. And so the Aboriginals said, "Hey, Mark," they quizzed me for 20, 25 minutes. And before you know it, they said, they ended up liking me, which I, you know, I don't care who I coach. It doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they said, "Hey, Mark, we hear you like to hunt." They had asked the reporter, because I'd spent the day with him, what my hobby was, hunting, fishing, things of that nature. So, "Well, we would love to take you. We'd like to take you hunting tomorrow night after you get finished." And I said, "Really?" "Okay, great." So I went out there, we got finished, and we must have drove for about 75 miles to the interior. I mean, there was nothing but bush. I saw a big bush fire that night. It was huge. It was 20 miles off, and it was huge. But we were pretty far from it. I asked him, I said, "What are we going to hunt tonight?" "We're going to hunt kangaroo. We're going to let you do all the shooting." So I shot five kangaroo that night. Well, you know, as hot as I'll get out, even at night, it was probably 95 degrees even at night out there because it was one of the largest deserts in the world. And so when we went out there, you know, being a country boy I am, I had short pants on like they did. I pulled my shirt off like they did. They didn't have any shoes on. I said, "Well, hey, I'm country boy. I like this kind of stuff too." So I pulled all my shoes off too and threw them in the Jeep out back there. And they said, where's your shoes?" And I said, "Hey, you guys go barefoot. I go barefoot. I'm a redneck. So let's go." So they put me on the front end of that Jeep. Let me do all the shooting with spotlight. And it was great. So it was a fun night because I made the luckiest shot in my life. With a 243, it was on a kangaroo. I don't know how many yards it was, but I nailed him. And they looked at me and they said, "Crocodile Mark." And I said, "Crocodile, yeah, Mark." Right. don't forget that now.
Okay, since you've done all this world traveling, spent a significant amount of time in places, what's the strangest thing you've ever eaten then?
Oh, man. Well, I had a grub worm that night because we cooked some of the kangaroo, but, you know, the kangaroo that I had killed, it wasn't just for them. It was for the clan. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't call them a tribe, it's clan. And so we took all this meat back and, you know, to the clan, but we had some out there in the bush, you know, that we cooked it. And I asked him, that's when I asked him the first time over, because I'd hunted 2 years with him. When I went back, you know, mm-hmm. two times on that side and two times on the other side. But I said, "Hey, where's all these stupid ass grubworms that you guys get, you know, you eat? They're about, you know, half the size of your thumb, you know?" And they said, I said, "Well, you want to eat a grub worm?" I said, "Sure. You know, you guys eat them, don't you?" Says, Yeah, we eat them every once in a while. You know, mainly we don't, or some of our relatives that live out a little further do maybe. But they found me a grub worm. They pulled up this thing, and all these grub worms are there. So he picked one up, brushed it off. Guy popped it in his mouth. He says, "Try it." And I said, "I tried it." It was like a big, you know, gloob of snot, you know. Oh. So anyway, there you go, grub worms. But, you know, the bats, they eat those bats. The fruit bats are like 4 to 5 foot wingspans. It's unbelievable how big their wingspans are. And these, they call them flying foxes. And so, you know, they're like eating a big rat. So,
oh boy. Yeah. Pass on that one. Likely. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. So just new book. What can we expect the new one out? What's up, Ramrod?
I hope a couple of months, you know, COVID's put a little, you know, kick in a little bit, everybody's shorts here, but mm-hmm. Hopefully a couple of months. And then it's a fun read. There's 83,000 words in this one. And my first two did not come to 83,000 words. So it's a little bit larger than the first two books combined. It's got a fair amount.
So the other two, I know that I got mine on Audible, both of them. And what I love about them is that there are parts of it you read. It's your voice. It's not somebody else reading it. And those are great. So I'm assuming we're gonna get the same possibility here with What's Up, Ramrod, right? We're at least gonna have an audio version of that one as well.
Yes, I'll do an audio. I might even do it the whole thing myself this time. So, but, you know, 83,000 words, you know, I just stayed after it because I kept writing and writing and writing. And I just, and I remember things. And so I said, well, I got to put this down. I got to put this down. And it's fun. It's fun to do, you know.
Yeah, well, I can't wait. I'm glad I got a little bit of a preview of it, but it's funny as hell so far. So if you don't mind, I'd like to preview one thing, not to give too much away, but I read something today that I spit coffee out. It was the title of this excerpt was called Panther Piss. Mm-hmm. What motivated you for that one? Because that's pretty funny.
Well, you know, with this amateur crap going on, I just came out of pro ball and these little kids, and then, we always did a little call at the end of the game. I never did that before. And I thought, oh gosh, you gotta be kidding me. I'd go 1, 2, 3 Panther piss, at the end, 1, 2, 3. And now the little kids would go Panther piss. And then the parents would say, what's Panther piss? And I said, well, ask your son. He knows what Panther piss is. Heals and cures anything. So they loved it, So the Panther piss you're talking about was with my college team. Mm-hmm. And we actually won that league in the Arizona Woodbat Collegiate League. And this team was pretty darn good. I had three guys actually drafted off this team, pitchers. And so I thought they were getting a little lax out there. And I thought, well, crap, And then I picked my sacrificial lamb out immediately. It was Isaac. What a great name. You got the Isaac, sacrificial lamb, Bible, the whole nine yards. Well, so anyway, Isaac was over there and I said, Isaac, you can't feel for shit. And he said, what? I said, you can't feel for shit. He said, well, maybe. And I said, well, you can hit a little bit. I do know that. I said, I like your bat, but your glove sucks. He said, let me see that glove. And he said, so he threw it at me. We had about, of the 20 players there, we probably had about 16 at the time that saw me do this. And I looked at it and I said, God, what a piece of crap you got here. I said, this is really, truly a piece of crap. So I unzipped. I let her rip. I peed in the glove. I rubbed it in. I smelled it. I rubbed it in. And then I threw it back at him. And I said, here, now it'll work. And the guy, and what the catcher said to me, he said, did you just pee in his glove? Pee in that glove? I said, well, that wasn't. Well, were those yellow? I think that was my yellow vitamins coming out the pocket, wasn't it? And so I just walked off. And he dodged the glove, So by the time I got into the third base box on the other side, the other team had already, zipped their bags up because they thought, well, this guy's going to do it to us too. So anyway, Panther piss. Heals and cures anything. We won. That's all that mattered.
Yeah. So that I could do this all day with you because you've got some of the best stories that I've ever heard, ever had on any of my podcasts. None better. You already alluded to it, so I don't have to go back to it again, but the mistake by the lake granny gets cold cocked is still my all-time favorite. Just the way, I think the way you described it is always, listeners to the show, whatever shows you've been on that I've done, that have heard that story, I get tons of feedback on that. Always have. But
late game, it happened. It's crazy.
Yeah.
There's no way you could have thrown that ball out of that bullpen, but I guess I found a way. It just slipped right out, just like there was goose crap all over my fingers. Whitey said the safest place for me was in the middle of the diamond. Can you hop that fence? Yes, I can. So there we go.
So I know you got this project with this book, Mark, and I know you've always done a lot of work for veterans. You've always done a lot of things through the Wake Foundation. How have you been able to keep up with that? I'm assuming that's kind of been something that unfortunately has probably been on hold during a pandemic. Is that something you plan to continue?
Yes.
Once we're given the all clear?
Yes, without a doubt. I Wounded Warrior, all these places, I haven't seen them on television really at all. It's hard, to go out and ask for donations, and people are struggling right now. All people are struggling. So the thing too with the Wake Foundation, Robert is out there. He's going to some gun shows. You know, that's a big deal for donations. And he has things that he, you know, they raffle guns off, like 6 or 7 guns actually each show they go to, and they do one every weekend somewhere in the Midwest, even this far down as Texas. But that's been holding together very well for him. And then we've got the concert coming up. There's another concert I was supposed to go to October the 6th down in Paris, Texas. I don't know if that's going to hold or not, you know, so, but I love being around the veterans. It's fun, you know, to listen to them. I get a kick out of it. I really, really do. And just to hear them talk. And I wish I could spend more time with them. My dad was shot up, you know, as in Korea. And, you know, you saw the good, the bad, the ugly. And that's, you try to put yourself in their shoes. It's hard to step into those shoes. And the families that come in there, it's tough.
Well, I appreciate you do. I'm former military myself, so I know that's important work that you're doing. So I appreciate that. Mark, if we can get back, I want to get back to baseball, just what's going on now with the game. So we've had a shortened season. I think everybody understands that. We knew the season was going to be weird. How do you feel about the expanded playoffs? It's now 16 teams. So it feels like, you know, over half the league, and it's true, over half the league is going to make the postseason in some way, shape, or form. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, they had to, you know, push all this together and probably a lot of trial and error. And I'm looking at this the same way as trial and error. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have some teams come up short. The Yankees, for instance, you thought they were going to blow everybody away, but that hasn't been the case. And, you know, you look at some of these playoff situations to where, you know, the Yankees are almost basically a 500 team right now. I'm just using them as an example because they've spent so much money, and a lot of other clubs have too, the Angels, you know, and they're well below par. But it's trial and error. And some of these teams that get in the playoffs that weren't doing so well might just, you know, fare better than you think, actually. Because playoffs, it's just you flip a coin, and if a pitcher does well out there and they decide to hit that night, who knows? That's once again, it's baseball at its best.
Mark, we have a question here from, it's on our Patterson Tire and Service text line. This text line allows us to hear from the fans. So please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire and Service is a whole lot more than a tire store, as they also specialize in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment today to head down to 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they are the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. Mark, I think you got a question very similar to this, but this comes to us from the text line. How would you fare today if you were a pitcher in today's game? How do you think you would fare?
Well, I think one of my funniest statistics is like in Forrest Gump, is that I hold a Cardinal strikeout record for relievers. I didn't find out till 5 years ago that I held a record like that. It was in any one single season. And, you know, and I thought, well, that's why my arm went, you know, kaputs, because I got used a lot. But I guess I could strike out some hitters every once in a while. I actually think I would strike out a lot more hitters tonight nowadays. Not that I was going out there to strike people out, but they have a longer swing, and, you know, they're going for the long ball, in the first place. I mean, these hitters have really done a lot to improve, but you know, you look at some of the pitches that they swing at, and you know, even the pitches that they take, I think I would have done fine. So.
Well, you struck out 130 people in 106 innings pitched in 1978. I hopefully my dad's not the one that told you had that record. I know he brought it up at one point. But I don't think that was 5 years ago, but hopefully my dad's not the one that informed you on that one. Cause he'll,
it was ESPN actually that informed me. Okay. They called me because they said, you know, your record might fall. And I said, what record? And they said, well, you hold the all time strikeout record for Cardinals in any one single season. I said, no shit. Really? So I said, who's set to break it? He said, Rosenthal. I said, well, that's great. Records are supposed to be broken. He missed it by three. I still hold it.
So, well, how about that? So you pitched up pitched the Cardinals up to 1982, and it looks like you ran into some injuries that cut you short, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I had thrown a lot.
So 1982. Now I was probably in an age where I wasn't paying attention to baseball yet. My year, almost that year of awareness of baseball and being entertained by it on the TV at least, was in 1985. But if you take us back to 1982. Going into that year, did the Cardinals have the expectations that they were going to be there? That they were not just contenders, but they had a real chance to win at the beginning? To kind of take us into that spring training, was there a sense that this team was that good, or was it still, we're not quite there yet, but we're really close? Like, what was it? What was the feeling overall?
Players really don't talk about, you know, winning the World Series so much. But, you know, you can see certain things that develop. It's pretty obvious that you're going to contend and you're going to compete highly, very highly. We had the thing before the season starts is we had a banquet, and I should know this, Knights of the Cauliflower Ear. And that was a big deal because that was before the season started. It was down at the Chase Park Plaza Hotel. Jack Buck was always going to MC that thing. Jack Buck got George Hendrick to come up and speak, and he never spoke. He says, I'll give you $200 to come up here and speak. And George says, He says, I'll give you $300. He says, He says, I'll give you $500. He says, George says, I can do that. So George got out there and he said, and George is very eloquent, very good person, wonderful, and team guy, and funny. And he said, yes, sir. He said, we have everything to go forward, and we expect to be in the series this year. And, you know, he said a little bit more, but you got an inkling right then. Mm-hmm. You know, Jack picked his spot, and he picked this person because George had never talked to the press. And I know the reason why, and it was a very good reason, and it happened in the American League. That's mm-hmm. where it started, actually. Prince of a guy, George Hendrick. Very good.
So, I know we've covered this ground before, Mark, I think in one of our previous conversations, but gosh, we're just seeing more and more these days that pitchers are just going down. Jim and I have talked about it on the show over and over again, how it just seems like such a short lifespan for a relief pitcher, just the way they're used. It's just not good on your arms, not good, you know, for your body. But we see guys, and more times than not, it feels like 2 or 3 years later, we don't know what happened to them. They're out of baseball or out of organization. So,
right.
What's happening in your opinion to some of the arms today? Because it's not like the first time this has ever happened. I think it's just the sheer quantity that we're reading about all the time. It feels like it's happening more often. That guys are just blowing their arms out.
Well, it's actually not from throwing too much, because you know, you look at a Wainwright, he's a rare one. You look at Verlander, there's another rare one. But they're a little bit older pitchers, and you know they're in tune to what it actually takes. I would venture to say I call it tensile strength. You know, I coached myself, but if you look at some of the players like ourselves in my era, you know, we used to torque wrenches, mow lawns, do a lot of work, and we moved our hands and our wrist, from the elbow down to the fingers is basically hitting a baseball and actually throwing a baseball. Whereas if you're playing Xbox nowadays, your thumbs are the hardest part, strongest part of your anatomy. You know, don't come at me with your thumbs. So I'm afraid of your thumbs. But, you know, on the other hand, see, we could survive because we were actually, there was some hidden strength with us right there that lasted, and we could handle it. And it was a different genre. You might say it's a different genre back then. It seems funny to see a country boy say genre, but anyway, it was a different casting, a way of going about your business, and a different strength. I mean, you shake hands with a big leaguer pretty much back then. The natural strength, you could feel it. And, you know, it's still there. It's still there, you know, the natural strength. So So I think there's a lot of issues because of that. And then when they go through that and they hit a tweak, it's the TJ comes up. Tommy John comes up more often than anything, it seems to be.
Yeah, it really seems crazy. I look at, you know, 10, a dozen years ago, you might have heard about a guy or two every season that had to get it. It just seems like you almost expect it at this point. Like, yeah, he's a staff ace, he's young, but at some point in time, you know, that's feels like it's going to happen. So I just didn't know what your opinion was. And I don't know, a lot of people think it might be workout related or just the way people train differently. I don't know.
16-year-old pitchers, you know, that are getting, you know, TJs now. And you know, the way they train is right. It's a very good point because, mm-hmm. you know, they go and they say, well, I worked out for an hour and I did this and this and this. And then they go back and play Xbox for 6 hours. And, you know, they wonder why. Well, David Price, for instance, you know, he had carpal tunnel because he was playing Xbox too much. A lot of people don't know that story. You know, mm-hmm. he was playing Xbox. So he had to have the carpal tunnel and, you know, it took him out of the game. It took this man out of the game. I'm not talking boy. I'm talking, you know, a pitcher that, you know, gets it.
Yeah.
You know, a real pitcher.
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. It's news to me. Yeah. Well, you know, I know as fans, we can, you know, we're fans. We're critical sometimes of players. But I always remind myself, Mark, that, you know, a lot of people are on Chris Carpenter, right? Not Chris Carpenter. I love Chris Carpenter. Matt Carpenter. Sorry, I had the name wrong. Fans are, you know, kind of upset at seeing his name in the starting lineup every day. You know, to get his bat in the lineup, we see an infielder move out to the outfield. Whereas you brought up earlier, they're trying to test young outfielders. I don't know how they're going to test them when they're moving infielders to the outfield to fit Carpenter's bat in. So a lot of people are frustrated with what they're seeing as far as, hey, if you're going to find out what you got in these young outfielders, why aren't they playing a little more often? And, you know, we're fitting in a struggling bat more often than not. But I always remind myself, Mark, that when I start to go in that direction, that, hey, Ron, you were a great baseball player. Weren't you the jackass who swung at a pitch out during a tournament? Yes, I was. I could not manage the 12 inches above my shoulders. That's why it never took me any farther than amateur ball. But I told you this, I think, on the phone last night, Mark. I hardly ever batted right-handed. I was a switch hitter. You face lefties are rare, and especially this was extra special because he threw in the mid-90s. When I stepped up to the plate, I had my mind made up. I'm swinging because I'm not even gonna be able to see it, and I couldn't. They called a pitch out. Didn't care. I swung as though that pitch was right down the middle of the plate, nowhere near it. Embarrassed as hell. I remember my third base coach was, you know, the manager just like hands up in the air, like, what the hell are you doing? What were you seeing up there? I'm like, I can't. I never bat this way. And so
you were covering the runner. That's what you were doing. You're covering the runner.
No, I wasn't thinking on my feet though. But so I always remind myself when I'm you know, I start getting critical of players, but that's what we do. We're fans, and you know, and we watch we watch a lot of baseball. But I don't know, you were alluding to it earlier, they're testing the outfielders, but you know what we're seeing as fans, we're seeing not all of them being tested, or at least tested consistently. It just feels like, okay, they're getting two or three starts, and whether they do good or bad, then we kind of see that they're not in the lineup for 2 or 3 days. And as fans, we kind of get a little frustrated, like, why aren't we sticking with the direction here, or at least getting to know? And in a short season like this, I just think what we've seen of Carpenter over the last two calendar years just hasn't been the Carpenter that we've been used to. And so I'm not really sure. I don't have the right answer. Mike Schilt knows a ton more than I do because he's with his team. He knows more than any of us. But just kind of what's your take on that? Not either.
There's probably a little bit more in there with the contract as well.
Sure.
You know, you've got a contract. You've got a player with tenure that, you know, plays with the right pitcher that they're trying to match up, I'm sure. It's the same thing you're trying to do with, you're trying to match up the young outfielder to the right pitcher, you know, so they can have, you know, the best chance of doing what they're supposed to do is, you know, get on base and maybe get some runners over or in to score. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're trying to do. They might be working on something. There might be some injury you don't even know about. You know, short on that side, though. The injuries, maybe not too much.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for whatever reason, you know, I don't know much about Matt Carpenter. You know, I know on occasion he'll plow into one, you know, and he'll open the game up. But then on other occasions, you know, he has a tendency to strike out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, it's hard to explain. You have to be in the clubhouse, basically in the manager's office to see what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not skirting that, but there's so many scenarios. You know, I'm not trying to skirt it. There's so many scenarios here.
Yeah.
And that come into play.
Yeah, and you know, I try to remind myself of that. You like the way I softened that question up, too. Like, I don't want this to sound bad, because you don't mean anything bad. But, you know, Matt Carpenter's always done everything the team has asked him to do. They asked him, you know, he made himself into an effective leadoff hitter. He's moved around to positions where they've needed him. And, you know, nobody doubts the work ethic or anything. I think it's just this offense has been so inconsistent over the last couple of years, just being able to, you know, put fat numbers up on the board, that I think we're looking at all these things now going, boy, if we had a solid core in the middle of this lineup, maybe these other guys' lack of performance or underperformance isn't noticed as much. But hey, you know what? They're a game above 500 in a screwed up year, and the chances of making the playoffs are rather high right now. So what are we really complaining about?
Well, here's the other thing too, is, you know, you talked about work ethic. I mean, I can have good work ethic, but I can fail because, you know, I'm coming up short, mm-hmm. because maybe I am losing a little bit as I get older. You know, you talk about hitting a 90 plus mile an hour fastball. That's what they're facing every day, but they're also changing speeds, you know, because most big leaguers can hit 95 mile an hour fastball. That their eyes light up when they see it. They love it. But, you know, you throw them, you know, two is danger, three is death. You throw two pitches to the same location, it's danger. You throw three pitches to the same location, it's pretty much death. So, you know, you don't see that very often. That's why they have, you know, other pitches in their arsenal. So when you go into that arsenal and you start picking your number one, number two pitch, and all of a sudden the third one just accidentally fell in, and you're throwing up your hands, say, I don't know why you got yourself out. The hitters get themselves out. It's not the pitchers that actually get them out. The hitters do it more than the pitchers.
Except the Astros. They just need a trash can, and they've solved that problem. They've solved that age-old problem with a simple trash can.
Well, maybe they could use a trash can where they go boom, boom for a curveball like Houston did.
Yeah. Well, hey, Mark, I don't want to eat up too much of your morning, but as always, always great to talk to you. And thank you for sharing all your stories. And we'll look forward to What's Up Ramrod as it's made available. I can't wait for that one. But you know what? I didn't want to skip over this. I'm sorry. Let's talk a little bit about, I almost blew right past it. I missed my exit ramp, and it was...
I'm not taking any nut shots anymore.
Nutty Buddy. Yes, I forgot. I was going to bring that up. I'm going to bring that up here at the end. You know, I would imagine business is still, you know, it's more than just for athletics, right? You have got police, you've got military that make use of this thing. So I'm sure business is holding its own. Yeah. I know that what I do for my day job, we are as well. So it's all good. But for those that don't know about this, tell us a little bit about Nutty Buddy.
Nutty Buddy was when I was with the Royals. I was actually testing my pitchers out one day, and I said, you know, I had some downtime. I said, hey, I mean, you guys wear a cup, half of them wore it. So I kept talking. I was just kind of kidding around with them anyway, eating up time more than anything. One of the guys said, hey, Litt, why don't you just invent one? So I went in there and I said, well, screw you, I think I will. So I went in the training room, got all this stuff, and, you know, a couple golf balls and some of this plexi stuff that molded, and I made the cup. I came out there the next day and I said, hey, here, what do you think of this? They said, wow, that's pretty good. Maybe you should patent that. And I said, nah. Well, anyway, 6 weeks later, I found out I did need a patent on it because it came back free and clear. So it's anatomically correct. It's a great cup. It's won five. I've won five awards, and I'm an idiot. So I think you know, but the cup is used, lacrosse, hockey. You know, I'm really going to do a commercial on granddads because I know granddads get kicked in nuts all the time. I'm sure, you know, you need that. Gramps, you need this, you know, you need this really bad. you know, that would solve the problem. The bad thing is when little Johnny kicks and he breaks his toe. So what'd you do to little Johnny?
Oh, you're wearing your cup.
So anyway,
my son a couple of years ago, and it's been unfortunate for my kids because they haven't been able to play baseball for over a year. My son last year broke a bone in his right hand week two into the season and missed out. And of course, this year he missed out because of COVID. So it's been a couple of years for those boys, but they haven't been able to play. But when I was going to get their equipment, my five-year-old at the time yells at me as I'm leaving, "Dad, don't forget to get me one of those penis things." Of course, he's talking about a cup, you can find this as Nutty Buddy. You can go search that on the internet. Hey, and I encourage everybody to search YouTube for Mark and some of his commercials for that one. And yes, you did take a 90, as you say it, you took a 90 mile an hour heater to the Peter.
Yeah. You know, I have five sizes: Hammer, Boss, Hog, Trophy, and of course, Mongo. So that's my five sizes.
And I'm sure the listeners can figure out what those sizes correspond to.
Oh yeah, there's a chart. There's a chart even for you. There's
you go. All right. Oh. Mark, again, thank you so much for your time. Always great talking to you. We'll stay in touch and best of luck. Where can the folks find you out there on social media? Are you on Twitter?
I'm not. Everybody says I should be. Maybe I'll creep on the Twitter. I'm on Facebook quite a bit, but yeah. You know, you can reach me at Mark Littell, if you can spell Littell, marklittell.com. Then I'll get you on right there. But I'm usually around. I'm easy to find. I talk to anybody. So I have fun.
You sure do. Well, Mark, thanks again. You take care. We'll stay in contact and until next time. Bye, Mark.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, that was our guest this week, Mark Littell, former player for the Cardinals and the Royals. Hey, if you haven't done it already, check out his books on the Eighth Day God Made Baseball and Country Boy Conveniently Wild. There's some funny stuff in there, folks. Good stories. Not all of them are baseball related, but it's about how he grew up, some of the crazy shit he did as a kid. And, you know, as far as the baseball side of it, I know most fans, that's why you're listening to this. Look, you find out things that happened off camera or that happened, you know, places where maybe the media didn't catch it. Just funny things that occur in this game, whether it's at the amateur level all the way up to the big leagues. He's got a ton of good stories. So if you haven't already, please check those two out. And also, look forward to his new one coming out, and that's What's Up, Ramrod. I can't wait to see that one. I consume them via audio. I did Audible, and that's where I picked them up because I had a long commute back and forth to work. It was just easier for me. It's funny when he reads it himself. It's great. All right, to wrap this up here, I'd like to take a moment to thank our featured partners, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Adams is home to the best barbecue in St. Louis. They do big box orders, catering, and of course, in-house dining. If you want the full experience, head on down to Adam's Smokehouse, meet Mike and the gang, then decide from their awesome menu. You're not going to be disappointed. That's our friends at Adam's Smokehouse, St. Louis. Here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend at KristenJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everyone that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. Make sure to check out her Ooh La La Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. And finally, don't forget our friends at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with the game of baseball or softball, look no further than Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. One more reminder, you can find us at TwoBirdsOnABat.com. Subscribe to the podcast there. It takes 30 seconds, and best of all, it's free. You can find us on Twitter at BirdsOnABatShow, Facebook, TwoBirdsOnABat. Search us by that name, like that page, share it around. On Instagram, you can find us at TwoBirdsOnABatShow. You can also find us at lineupmediagroup.fm, home of Yo Radio. All right, folks. The Minnesota Twins are up next. We'll see what they can make up from that disappointing two games that they had in Minnesota back in July/August. Hell, I forget the dates now. But looking forward to that, and looking forward to getting back on here with Jimbo next week. Until then, for all of us at Ruffled Feathers, let's go Birds.